Moncrief on News Talk.
Declan, Barbara Scully and Declan Buckley. I was going to call you Declan Scully there.
Declan Scully, yeah, and Barbara Buckley.
You nearly broke the news.
Yeah.
Embargo till Friday, Sean. Yeah,
yeah. Yes, whoops.
I like the sound of Barbara Buckley, though. That's quite nice.
Yes.
I had a nickname of BB for when I started work first in the travel business. It didn't stand for Barbara Buckley. It stood for Big Bird.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That sounds a little cruel.
It was a little cruel, yeah. Big Bird. But then again, my brother's growing up called me Heifer, so it was an improvement on that.
Oh, that's
I've impressed everybody enough now. Yeah.
Wow. She's had a hard life. The PTSD is real.
It's a wonder I can get up in the morning.
So if any of these questions you think Barbara isn't very sympathetic, now you know why. I know as parents you're supposed to let your adult children live their own lives, and generally we do. We have three children, and I've never butted in or interfered, but I'm very close to intervening now. Our eldest just got engaged to her on-again, off-again boyfriend. We are reeling from the news. They were together for 4 years and he made her miserable. Eventually, after a lot of back and forth, they broke up. We were all overjoyed and would have been very much vocal about how this was the right thing to do. All of her friends rallied around and felt the same as us, that he wasn't going anywhere in life and treated her terribly. She was only single for about 6 months. And I think found it very difficult so soon he weaseled his way back in. She's at the stage where most of her friends are married or engaged, and I think she wasn't meeting anyone else. She convinced herself, wrongly, that he was better than being alone. He is back living in her apartment, which we helped her buy, and I feel he's not charged one bit. She's expecting us to host a big engagement party, but I can't bring myself to celebrate when I know she has picked the wrong person. What should I do?
Oh dear. This is interesting. The writer, I think, has actually answered her own question of what should I do in the very first line of the letter, where she says that she knows as parents we are supposed to let our adult children live their own lives and not interfere. And that's really the beginning and end of it. And it holds true even if you think that they are making a mistake. And that's whether it comes to picking a partner or picking a career or dropping out of university or whatever. You know, there's only so much you can do. And it is hard to stand back and watch your adult child make what you consider to be a mistake.
Mm.
But, you know, if they come and look for, I mean, this is the same with anything. I've said this before and lots of times. If they come to you and look for your advice or your opinion, then by all means. But if they're happy with their decision, as this daughter seems to be, there's really nothing that you can do. And the sooner you kind of come to grips with that in your own head as a mother, the better. So what I would suggest is you know, I think you have to make a supreme effort to celebrate the engagement. But I'd also suggest that you try and stop the negative chatter that obviously goes on within the family and with the friends, because I don't think that's helpful. Mm-hmm. The daughter has made a decision. And she'll be the one that has to live, unfortunately, if it goes wrong, with the consequences of that. But even as parents, although our supreme instinct is always to protect our children, as they become adults, you have to learn to stand back.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't actually hear the full story. I'm not saying that this guy didn't do anything or the breakup wasn't severe and horrible. But what often happens is that you only get to hear about those kind of moments when, you know, when the whatever hits the fan and you're there going, you know, I'm watching little Becky crying into her cornflakes and my heart goes, I hate the person who did this to her. And she, of course, in the moment is like really ramping up all, and then he did this and then he did that or whatever. Because that's what that moment was. Yeah. And this person is remembering that moment. In fact, I noticed in that letter that in the litany of accusations against this fella was just a general, like, he's going nowhere in his life.
Yeah.
And then there's the specific, the breakup. There wasn't any kind of, he did this and then he did that. And there's not, you know, as a legal case against this guy, I'm not really swung. I'm just feeling that the mum or the dad, whoever wrote this letter, took against the person who hurt their little daughter in that moment. And that person will never be forgiven no matter what. Whereas the daughter has. So, you know, you have to realise that sometimes, as we all know, any of us that have had parents know that our parents were wrong often, you know, about what they thought we should do, about what the worldview that they have didn't match our worldview. And we had to, you know, stick.
And there is a smack of that off this, where she says in the letter, where does she say that he isn't, or he wasn't going anywhere in his life.
Yeah.
So there's a smack of that older generation of like, he's meant to be a provider and he's not going to be a great provider. And she's probably looking for maybe something different in a partner than what they think is appropriate.
As you said that, I just realized something kind of funny is that if the daughter isn't living up to the values that they espouse as people, then they failed in giving them to her. So they're the ones at fault, really, if she's not seeing the world like that. So in a way that they need to take a step back and go, you know, there's nothing you can do. We all know situations where people, I think about when I was a teenager and the stuff that my mum didn't want me to do this and my dad didn't want me doing that and go, whatever. And I go, no, I'm doing that. And, you know, and did I make the right or wrong choices? Clearly not.
But I also think, do you think money comes into it a little bit here as well as part of their anger in that he's now in the apartment that they helped the daughter buy. So it's almost like they still have ownership of the apartment, and therefore they're not happy with him being in there.
Which is also part of the separation, is that they need to realise is that their little girl who they're, you know, they probably helped push through college and they probably, you know, it's not your Tamagotchi toy that you're playing with and you have to kind of feed and nourish and you win points. But there's a real person with their own kind of autonomy, and she's choosing. That's her route through life. They need just to take a step
back.
You
do have to take
a step back. Buy a hat.
Yeah. Anyway, they've said when they broke up, we were all overjoyed and would have been very much vocal about how this was the right thing to do. So she already knows their opinion.
Yeah.
So there's nothing else they can add to this.
Exactly. And it is like, I know that like when you think your children are making a mistake, no matter what it is, and I'm talking about adults, I'm not talking about teenagers, I'm talking about fully fledged adults. It is hard to kind of sit back and say nothing and go, okay, love, if that's what you think, you know, if that's what you want to do and you feel they've weighed up all the pros and cons and they've made a decision, you've got to let them make the decision.
Because most of the time it's just your opinion.
Yes, it is just your opinion.
And your opinion can be really wrong because you cannot see the world the way that they and their generation
live it. As we've often said before, when it comes to relationships, you never know what's going on right inside another person's relationship. Yeah. You can't.
No.
So, you know.
And things can change. People can change. I know that, you know, if I was evaluated as, you know, marriageable, you know, quality from my husband back 20 years ago, that the family would have gone, oh, they probably still do, actually.
Whose family? His family.
His family. But he went, oh, my God, you know, run.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd like to think that over time I've kind of, you know.
I doubt if my English in-laws were thrilled to bits with the thought of me and my 9-year-old daughter arriving on the scene as well. I don't think I was particularly considered to be a fabulous option.
You can't make your decisions based on what somebody else might think might happen.
Plus also, she knows what they think, but she's still, you know, back with them.
Yeah.
And no doubt he knows what they think.
Probably.
And he's back with her. And they know the difficulty of that, but they're still
And sometimes that whole thing provokes people as well. Sometimes telling people that you don't want them, it's the old classic Romeo and Juliet scenario. You tell somebody that they're not meant to be with that person, then they think that the stars are aligned so that they have to be. And, you know, so the best thing to hold your counsel, step away and, you know, try.
Exactly. I agree with that.
Yeah. I've been seeing my girlfriend for about a year and a half. We're in our late 20s, so things are starting to feel a bit serious. And she's really pushing for us to move out and live together, as I am still living with my folks. The thing is that there's no way I can afford to move out anytime soon because I'm in serious debt. I was really foolish in college and ended up getting a couple of credit cards and also getting really into betting online. It's properly embarrassing, but essentially I racked up them more than 20 grand in debt and I'm on a payment plan to try and clear it. I'm worried now that if I tell her, she'll be annoyed I kept it from her, but the only people who know are my parents. Things got really out of hand for a while and they had to step in to help. It just means that for me, owning a gaff or paying rent or anything like that are years and years away. Should I just break up with her before things get too serious?
So this is kind of like the opposite perspective on the last problem, isn't it? It's kind of like, okay, so these are the people who are inside the relationship evaluating how things are going to go going forward. So what's happened with this guy is that, you know, the mistakes of the past are coming back to kind of create a present that impacting his relationship and his kind of marriageability or his kind of whatever you want to phrase that. I think it's great that he's got a grip on what his problems were and that he's resolving those. That definitely is a thumbs up. It does also mean, though, that he's in a situation where it would have immediate consequences to whatever plans they might have as a couple. So I think that the first thing that he does need to do is he does need to tell her. I don't think he's done anything wrong in holding that particular piece of information back until now. But as the relationship progresses into a potential next step, it's definitely cards on the table scenario, do you think?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm just thinking...
Cards on the table probably isn't the best way of phrasing it.
Just as you were saying that, and I hadn't thought of this when I was thinking about this earlier, but just as you were saying that, I think in most couples, when you get to the stage of thinking this could be serious, you know, thinking of maybe settling down together, you do have to have that conversation about finance and about... Have you got any money? And have I got any money? Or have you got any debt? Or have I got any debt?
So, you look rich.
Yeah. And you're spending like as if you have loads of money. Yeah. But have you
on
not?
On me. And I like that.
Yeah. you know, and I think particularly when you're younger rather than older, because, you know, you think you've your whole life stretching out ahead of you. Credit cards can be quite a temptation.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we spent years thinking, you know, that the credit card limit, as my husband used to say, was a target rather than, you know, a limit. So I do think it's an uncomfortable conversation for most couples anyway. And I agree with you. I think the fact that this guy has gotten hold of the issue and has a payment plan and is working through that is positive. But I also think, which is really important, is that honesty is a foundation stone of any long-term relationship.
Yeah,
there has to be honesty. So I think if he loves this woman and he thinks there is a chance of it going further, I think he does need to be honest with her and he does need to tell her. I mean, to me, I think it shows, you know, a strength of character that he has overcome these issues and he's paying off the money and all the rest of it. It may impact their ability, as he said, to buy a house or rent or whatever in the short term. But I think he does have to be honest. And then it's going to be up to her, obviously, what she decides to do with that information or whether it signals the end. But I don't think it necessarily would. It might delay things a little bit, but I don't think it necessarily would.
No, and I think it does stand to him that he overcame this problem.
That's what I would concentrate on. Yeah. I certainly wouldn't
presumably
break it up.
During the time that they've been together, it hasn't been that much of an issue. And it's also, it is that thing of like, what it will do is it will preclude certain kind of things from happening in the immediate future. I don't know why his credit rating would be like and stuff like that, that might make decisions that they would normally or otherwise be able to make.
But I don't wish to go back to Celtic Tiger era kind of thinking, but to add 20 grand onto the lifetime of a mortgage wouldn't result in that much every month extra.
Well, that's also true. now,
I know it was that kind of thinking got us all into trouble before, but that is the truth.
But I think it's probably the cheapest way to, in terms of repayment.
Well, if he wants to move on, like, I think there's ways around it and, you know, they should definitely have a chat about it.
My dad died last year after being sick for a long time. It's been the most difficult and devastating time for us as a family. My mom looked after him and she's a lot more time on her hands since his death. I'm worried about helping her move on as she doesn't seem to be making any progress and isn't getting out much. She's in her 70s. She's young at heart. I've got a brother who lives abroad. So it feels like it's all falling on me to support her emotionally and have a lot on my plate with a young family. Any advice for helping her get back on her feet?
Gosh, this is interesting, and I'd say this is not at all unusual. And you can hear this woman's kind of frustration and almost exhaustion coming through from the letter. But there's two issues I think here that are kind of separate and kind of interwoven. The first is the mother who's still obviously grieving the father's death. It was less than a year ago. And, you know, I mean, the older you get, the quicker every year goes. So they've been married for decades. Yeah. He's gone less than a year. It's going to take her own sweet time in order to, in inverted commas, get over that or move on or whatever it was that this woman said. Because again, I think, especially for older couples, and especially because of the way society used to be, especially if it's the woman, which it usually is, who survives longer, is that, and I watched this with my own mother, you have to redefine your life, if you like, once your partner is gone. You know, there's lots of things that now look very different than they did when you were part of a couple. So that's quite a process and it'll take time. And there's nothing I don't think the daughter can do to hurry that up. That will take its own sweet time. And as long as she's there to give the emotional support to the mother, that's all you can do. And that'll happen. As regards the other thing, which is the very common issue, of the burden of care of an elderly parent or parents falling onto one set of shoulders in a family. That's really, really common. Very often, dare I say, it is a daughter. And I can totally identify with that because it very often happens when you've got young kids and you have a whole load of other things pulling at you as well. And there's, again, it's very hard to give practical advice in that situation. I know when there was times when I felt my mother was a widow for like 20 years, more than 20 years. And I know at times when I felt I was being pulled in all directions because the girls were young and blah, blah, blah. I remember sitting down one day and saying, I have to have a priority list in my head that I'm clear about in order to, you know, kind of handle this. Because there was times when my mother was looking for something, but the kids needed something. Something else was going on as well. And I was like, which takes priority here? And I remember sitting down and saying, I have to be clear in my own head. Number one priority is my kids. Number two has to be my husband. And number three has to be my mother for practical things. You know, yeah. I mean, I'm not talking about if she rang and
where
said,
were you on that list?
I've fallen off. Yeah, where was I on the list? Yeah, I didn't come into it. I'm a martyr. But that made it easier to be able to say at times to my mother when she rang up and said like, oh, I need a lift to the doctor next Thursday. You know, and me saying, look, the kids have something on Thursday. I can't do Thursday. You'll have to rearrange it.
Yeah.
Because I think we feel guilty about doing that. We feel we should be always there and always doing. The other thing which I would say to her, just as a matter, as a way of comfort, is that, you know, obviously, like everything in life, this isn't going to last forever. Your kids will get older and they can be quite helpful then as well. Get them. One of the best pieces of advice I'd give to everybody, anybody, is get your kids driving as soon as you can, because having another driver when you've got a parent who needs a lot of ferrying around the place is actually quite useful and quite handy. So that's really all. It's tough. I know it's tough.
Yeah. I mean, it's that weird balance between the long game and learning to live with your new reality versus the incredibly human desire to want to have the problem solved and fixed immediately, which, you know, you can't solve somebody else's emotional scenario.
No.
You can't fix the fact that your mum is aging. You can't, you know, these things are just, they need to be lived with rather than resolved. And I think from that point of view, it's kind of, I understand the person's perspective that they're kind of going, I want almost to go back to when there was no hurt and no difficulty and life was sort of simpler back then.
Mm.
But it is that whole thing of like, it is a phrase that you go through and, you know, what do you do though? It's about finding a balance. And and I did make the joke about where were you on that list, because it is kind of what my advice is to remember that you do actually have to be on your own list of, you know, the airplanes tell you, you know, we joke about this all the time about, you know, put your own air mask on first, because if you're out cold, you can't help anybody.
You're not used to anybody, yeah.
And that's the primary thing is plan for the long term, be reasonable and realistic about what you can do, and also try to separate what's a rational course of action from what's the emotional guilty side of stuff. Because the guilty side of thing can force you to do stuff that's
pushing you too hard. I agree. And I think that's a good point that you make, because I do think, and I remember doing this myself, is you do have to make sure you take breaks. You know, you're entitled to take your holidays. You're entitled to go away for a weekend. You're entitled to all of that stuff. And I mean, I know, and I can hear my mother's voice in my ear. I know when I used to do that, and especially in her later years when she was quite frail. Now, usually, always, I think I made sure one of my brothers was around in case she needed anything. But I used to say to her, I'm going away for the weekend. I'm not going to call you. So you won't hear from me until I come back, because I would always know by her voice if she wasn't well or there was something bothering her or there was something up, and then I'd end up coming home. So I used to go, somebody will ring me if there's trouble, and, you know, one of my brothers will be checking in and out, but I'm not going to call you. And I used to always call her on the motorway on the way back. You know, you hit the M50, I'll call my mother now and see what's going on. Because you do need that breakaway. Yeah. You do need to take that space.
You
in
have
your head.
To have the break. And I have the same issue. And sometimes I'll decide not to go out or not to go away or not see my friends because I'm concerned that something's going to pop up. And then I'll go next week. And then the same thing, you know, so you have to have the balance. You have to find a way to make it work.
And it goes against your natural instinct. It's a bit like what we were talking about earlier, which your natural instinct with your kids is to protect them. You also feel this duty of care with your parents as they become more frail that you want to kind of look after them.
I kind of get a sense of this, that like the mother's been obviously married to the father for, let's assume, decades. Mm. She's in her 70s now. And I kind of feel behind this is a fear that, you know, she isn't going to get out much, and this probably isn't going to get any better for her.
And I think you get over the grief. I think you do. You don't get over it, but you move on from that.
Yeah. But she's in her 70s, so maybe there's a kind of a fear that.
What?
Yeah, she's going to deteriorate, really, essentially.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing about getting older and getting frailer.
Yeah.
You just keep, you know, you just keep getting older.
But that, this won't be, this is kind of the start of that process,
well,
perhaps, and it's not,
I don't necessarily think that's true, because I do know cases, and I know my own mother, who would have been in her mid-70s when my father died. Like, she did, once she got over the initial shock, and she did go a bit weird for a while, but once she got back on the horse, like, she actually discovered, you know, new things that she could do, and there is a free freedom, okay. I guess, that, and if you're reasonably well, now, I mean, obviously, you know, you're in your 70s, but if you're reasonably okay, you may find a whole new circle of people to hang out with, hobbies, things to do, interests, you know, so I think...
As long as she's taking care of herself, because it is this kind of the blistering shock of immediate grief, you know, is totally disorientating, but once you get into a rhythm of living with that, which a lot of people talk about, people forgetting to eat and people not, particularly when you end up,
see,
you know,
I think women are better at that stuff than men.
Oh, I don't know. I think the women, like, will be I won't bother cooking a dinner for two.
Yeah.
Sorry, for one. Whereas I felt the responsibility to make a dinner for two.
Yeah.
I won't bother. And then you see it a lot that older women kind of just start, oh, you know, we'll have whatever's in the kitchen and that kind of thing. You're looking at me. You're not going to be
you.
Do you
know what I'm thinking? If that's me, like, oh no, like, oh God, no. I'd be making enough dinner.
You've got to eat.
I'd be having it for 2 days.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be still making dinner for two days, not two people.
I've been going out with my fella for about 6 months now. He's mad into GAA and plays matches most weekends. To be honest, he's a lad's lad, and I like fellas like that anyway. But the trouble is, he's a bit of a weepy. Whenever you watch a sad movie or a rom-com on Netflix, 9 times out of 10, I will catch him quietly sniffling to himself. I take the mickey out of him for it, but he's a devil for crying. I brought him to my auntie's funeral 3 weeks ago and he was in bits. He never even met her, for goodness sake. How do I get him to man up without hurting his feelings? I'm worried he isn't as strong as I thought he was initially. I'm worried he's going to end up writing poems.
Oh, I'm looking forward to hearing Declan's take on this. Off you go there,
that's
Declan.
The worst, writing poems.
I mean, I feel really sorry for this woman. I feel really sorry for this woman here, like, you know, because unfortunately she seems to have found herself
in the wrong century
in a relationship with somebody who seems quite normal. And obviously that's not what she needs. Obviously she needs somebody who's completely either toxic masculinity or completely emotionally stunted or something, you know, inhibited. In order for her to feel like she's in a relationship with a man. I think her own worldview is really messed up. And I think if I could meet this guy, I'd tell him to dump her because she's trash. And she won't be a good mother to his children.
Now we're getting to the point.
She wouldn't be a good mother to his children. And, you know,
and his parents don't like you anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, somebody reacting to the emotional triggers that a film is meant to make you have is like a normal personality, you know. So having a little cry at a rom-com is what you're meant to do. And if you don't, if you don't feel anything, it's because it's not for you, not because your emotions, you know, don't work.
Yeah.
I think that's a really stupid comment to make about somebody wanting, you know, your lad's lad to be so incapable of using the full gamut of his emotions is a really messed up thing in life. And it's a, like, it's, I just,
I think you've been quite measured in that response. Yeah. I really expected you to kind of go off the deep end.
No, because I'm like, I think it spoke for us. I think as we were reading that letter, everybody was going,
yeah, I mean, you would think we've gone beyond the thinking that all men should love sport and should never cry.
I know I like lads like that.
I mean, I was just thinking as you were talking there, like, you know, she should be, I think you mentioned about not being a good father to your kids. I do think that men who are in touch with their emotions are going to be much better.
No, the other way around, that she won't be a good mother to his kids.
He'd be a great dad.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's, you know, it's about proportion.
Don't encourage her now.
And as for writing poems, what woman wouldn't want her man to be able to write her a poem? God, I love that.
Yeah, not Paul Durkin. What? He was rubbish, wasn't he? What a waste of a life.
and Seamus. And you know, you just go, look, the bottom line is that if somebody is able to express their emotions, it doesn't necessarily mean
they're
suddenly going to become these kind of,
you know. But it also doesn't mean weakness. In fact, I think it's the opposite.
Yeah.
Do you know, I think to equate a man showing emotion with weakness and not being a proper man is, as you say, just the absolute essence of toxic masculinity.
Messed up, horrible.
And it's
why
the world is in the mess that it's in at the minute. If we'd more men who are unafraid of showing their emotions and expressing their emotions, the world would be a much better
place. But isn't it really telling?
What should she do, though?
She should grow up.
She's listening to us now and she's going, no, but I want a man to be a man. Like, should she go for counselling? Should she read a book?
I think she just needs to kind of get some
sense of like what humans are and the complexity.
I sometimes think we take in messages from society, especially nowadays, without actually using any critical thinking for what we're actually looking for or thinking or asking for. And I think if she sits down and thinks, what does she actually mean by having a lad, a man's man who's strong and doesn't show any emotion and is all like, I don't think she knows what it is that she's actually saying, because I think if you did,
or
you'd be like, no.
If she does know what she's saying, then what she's basically saying is that she's like a handmaiden for the patriarchy, that what she basically wants to do is to institute a certain dynamic where the men are the men, and then, and that's fine, you know, that's fine, but you have to be honest about what it is you're actually asking for. And if that is the case, then that's the road that would bring her to a
and
place
who's
where...
And who's better, this baloney as well? Like, you know what I mean? Is she hanging around with a whole load of people who, you know, or with men who are all real, you know. I don't know. She'd need to look at all of that. I think before she goes to counselling, look at where you're getting this information from. Think about what it is that you're actually looking for and why.
Yeah.
And I think hopefully that would be enough to make her realise this is not good. And as I say,
because if you find somebody attractive because they're masculine.
Would you ever write me a poem? I'd love a poem.
Yeah, I will. I'll write one next week.
Would you? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It might be a haiku.
Well, someone's texting in to say, to the girl whose fella cries, Washington Irving once said, there is a sacredness in tears. They are not a mark of weakness, but of power. They speak more eloquently than 10,000 tongues. They are messengers of overwhelming grief, of deep contrition, and of unspeakable love. Well, he sounds like a total girly girl, that fella, doesn't
he? It's a bit of an over-the-top reaction to Jennifer Aniston's movie.
Barbara Deccan, thank you both very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.